Welcome back to another episode of Upon This Land, History, Mysteries, and Monuments. This episode is the second part of our exploration into the 2022 excavation of Building X, one of the over 20 foundations here in George Washington Birthplace National Monument that we protect and preserve. On the previous episode, we talked about how the excavation was conducted and who was conducting the excavation. So for more information on that, please refer back to our previous episode. On this episode, we'll be diving in to the results of that excavation and what that tells us going forward into the future. I'm Jonathan Mauriat, the lead interpretive park ranger here at George Washington Birthplace National Monument and Thomas Stone National Historic Sites. Joining me on this episode is Dustin Baker, the Chief of Interpretation, and then our special guests, Carrie Gonzalez, the Chief of Cultural Resource Management at the parks, and Maureen Myers, a Principal Investigator of Archaeology at New South Associates.
No pun intended, this whole project was a monumental task. I mean, dozens of people involved. The site was opened for almost 10 months, and I guess we're getting into the real heart of why we're here. What have we learned from this project? And I'll start with the first kind of leading question is, what was this? What was this building?
I think the shortest answer is that the building was used as a residence, and it changed, as Carrie's already mentioned, over time. And so the building itself, the remains that we were looking at are really the basement of the building itself, or the lower levels. And it was added on, as she said, over time. So it initially started, first let me say we identified five rooms, which the archaeologists in the 1930s had identified and named. So we just, of course, used their names for those rooms. And room A is basically included an exterior entry staircase into it. So you would go down into it. It had a chimney base with some storage, an enclosure for an interior staircase, and was really just a cellar space for storage. It included what we were able to take out of there, again, out of context, was a lot of ceramics dating to the 18th century, some bottles, some glass, wrought nails, which are early. Room B was then part next to that. It had a rectangular brick foundation. And it allowed us to see evidence, or Willie Graham saw it as evidence, that additional construction was probably planned but not done. He could see some indicators of that attached to room B. Room C had three sets of brick foundations and two chimney bases. And some of the fact that we found fewer artifacts here suggested that it was an area that didn't have dining, whereas room B probably did. And then you finally had room D and E, which room D was constructed off room A, and then room E was a chimney base as well. Those are basic descriptions of the rooms themselves. Room A was built first, then added on room B, and then C, D, and E. And that C, D, and E are probably separate bed chambers. And they each had heated closets for each of them, which sounds really strange. It sounded strange to me. I thought, why would you heat a closet? Although the idea of warm clothes on a cold winter morning sounded like a good idea. But these were more like, we should think of them as working spaces, like a space where you might have a desk and a chair, and you would be able to work in those areas. So almost like little studies. And Carrie, you want to add anything there?
So at some point we were looking at square footage of Building X and wanting to compare it to the size of the Memorial House Museum, and our rough estimates of Building X in its complete form, to include the basement areas, first floor, and then the loft upper areas, is a little over 3,000 square feet. In its initial form, when you're just looking at room A, for any listeners out there that need more of a visual, if you look up the Rochester House in Westmoreland County. That is a really good example of what, the form and the shape of what Room A would have looked like when that was initially constructed. It's a bit later than Building X, which was in the 1720s, but it gives you a good idea of that. But in its fully constructed form, this was a substantial home. It would have been lived in people who were of means, of the upper middle class. This family obviously had a lot of land. They had the means to build a structure like this with all these rooms and the heated closets. But remember, a closet isn't a warm space to keep your clothes. It was more of like an office space. Just your everyday planter wouldn't have been able to afford such a structure.
So when you combine this new look at Building X with, the artifacts and information that came from the 1930s, can you kind of paint a picture of when this building was in use?
Yeah, I think so. I think you can look at some previous analyses of the artifacts by Phil Levy and his students a couple of years ago. And we incorporated that. And then we looked at some of the artifacts that we got out of the fill. So that gives you a general sense of when the building's in use.
It was my understanding that the most recent information from Phil was that the house was probably abandoned around the Revolutionary War period.
And yeah, when they moved, thank you. Yeah,
sure. Yeah, they moved back, like down the road, inland some to Blenheim, and that's where the family lived. But one thing that I want to point out, and this isn't my own, this came from Phil's analysis as well. For those of you who don't know, Phil Levy is knows all things Washington and has been a great researcher here at GWA. But what Phil explains in his reanalysis of the artifacts is, as an archaeologist or someone that's looking at an assemblage, you have a tendency to say, okay, all these artifacts came from this cellar feature, essentially a big hole in the ground. And you want to say all of these came from within the house. It's just kind of how your mind would work. But what Phil realized is the artifacts that were found within Building X look like materials from a midden, like from yard trash, essentially. A lot of coarser earthenwares, stuff that would have been like utilitarian type stuff, not fine porcelains, tea sets, things like that. And what he is proposing is that when Building X was abandoned, they moved down the road, and then the house was either, since it wasn't being lived in, was disassembled, bricks were robbed, boards were taken, and a hole was left in the ground. Those holes need to be filled. And what you do is you take your trash from the yard and shove it into the hole. And so you can't take the artifacts strictly from what was found within Building X and say all these materials were used in the house. It was from a variety of tasks. We have a midden that's between the standing kitchen and Building X, and it looks like a lot of yard activities, utilitarian stuff, kind of took place in that area. So I wanted to point that out.
So this site or this archaeological feature has, befuddled people for over a generation. There's been a lot of confusion over what this is. Was there anything unique about this site that you all found?
As an archaeologist, I'm sort of trained to see broader patterns. I think it's a pretty good example of the architecture at that time, and that the way a lot of families in Virginia were like the Washingtons. I mean, I think they exemplify sort of what's going on in the larger colony at that time of people coming from elsewhere and trying to make a better life. And so they're doing that. And I mean, to me, it's a very American story, right? Of people just coming here and making a different kind of life for themselves. And it often means increasing wealth. And so that's what we see there. I think, yes, there are probably very unique architectural features there, but I can't exactly speak to those. That's really a great question for Willie Graham. I think one of the things that I do see is that, like a lot of other sites in Virginia, a lot of plantation sites in Virginia, we tend to focus on the main house, and that's great, I think, and on the individual. And I see a real potential for a lot more work at the site that shows us the entire household, a larger, it's that would encompass more of the people that allowed this to happen as well. I think we know a lot about, you know, obviously George Washington, and I know we think, you know, it'd be great to always learn more and his family of origin. But there's a part of me that's also interested, and again, I say this as a native of Virginia who grew up hearing all of the George Washington lore and worked at Mount Vernon. It was a real, you know, privilege to be able to work at the birthplace. But I want to know more about the world around him, the household around him that would have added to his foundations, right, to his ideas, his moral principles, or his ideas of democracy. And in order to do that, I think we need to expand and see who else is living at this household and just in general households like this.
I'm glad you brought that up, Maureen, because that gives me a good segue into telling our listeners that we are working towards that very effort now to really understand this landscape. And we're doing that in a couple ways here. We're taking all of the archaeological data that we have from past excavations and getting that into one map. We're digitally, you know, putting them into GIS so we can take a step back and look at this landscape and see where we have outbuildings, kitchens. You know, we know we have the dairy. Where were the enslaved living on this landscape? We know where one was. We know about how many enslaved people work on this property. There are definitely more. And in addition to taking that mapping and looking at where things are, we'll develop a archaeological management plan to see what we want to look at next. But we do, in the coming months, have an excavation planned. There is a building in the memorial area that we're going to re-explore. It was looked at in the 1930s. For some reason, they lost interest in it. It does have a brick foundation. We have named it Building Y, for obvious reasons. And we're hoping that that's going to help answer some more questions that we have about the birthplace, you know, namely the big question, was George Washington born in Building X? You know, we still can't answer that. But we are working towards all of that.
So if you're familiar with the history of the birthplace and Wakefield, you probably are very familiar with a long-standing oral tradition that the home site burned down on Christmas Day, 1779. So what have we seen in Building X to either validate that story or counter it?
Well, it's what we haven't seen. We don't have the archaeological assemblage that reflects a house that burned down. That is a clear signature when you're excavating a site that has been burned. Even if the house, let's say that the house was abandoned when it burned, which the stories talk about them rescuing furniture out of it. So presumably it wasn't empty for long periods of time. But what you get is... a lot of melted glass. You get burned ceramics. The nails show evidence of being burned because when you find them, they're not rusted. And, you know, archaeologically, a lot of times when you find nails that have been in the ground for years, we call them rusty Cheetos because that's what they look like. They look like brown Cheetos. So you would have a lot of nails that aren't rusted. They're called annealed nails. You would have melted glass a lot. If the fire's really hot, it's just literally you have blobs of it. The brick in the basement would have shown evidence of being burned. And while we have some melted glass in the assemblage, we don't have that concentration that would be indicative of a house being burned. And Maureen, from, you know, you were here during the excavation. I was not. Do you have anything to add to that from what you saw and what, you know, maybe Willie was talking as he was doing his analysis?
Right. Yeah, no, I completely, not a whole lot to add other than when a house burns, if that's a pre-contact house or a historic house, you know it. Right. As an archaeologist, you can tell because there are stains in the ground. The artifacts, as Carrie, you know, elucidated, are clearly damaged and clearly show signs of burning. And we just didn't see that in these remains at all. I mean, there's no sign on the brick itself that there's any kind of burning happening there. There's no sign in any of the, of the soil, the intact soil under the fill that there would be burning. Whereas, you know, I have excavated soils that have been completely burned, and they're, as you would expect, they're all shades of red and maroon and black, with hard chunks in them, and often preserved wood. But we didn't see anything like that at all. So,
can you explain to our listeners why this feature was filled back in? A lot of visitors have come here, and they've, you know, asked about, like, why it isn't permanently open for them to see.
It's expensive. The brick has been in the ground for a long time, and that type of brick gets really friable. You would have to have a climate-controlled environment. You couldn't just leave it out to the elements. It would start to crumble and fall apart, and the National Park Service is in the business of preserving and protecting. Lining it with the geotech cloth that New South did and then reburying it will preserve it for future generations. If there's some technological advance in 50 years and they want to re-excavate part of it to re-examine the brick, it will allow that. Leaving it open to the elements would just destroy it. Now, if we wanted to do something like they did at Michigan and Fort Michilimackinac, or I think at St. Mary's, where they have like a plexiglass over it and encase it. That is an expensive endeavor, again, climate controlled. So it comes down to preservation or money. It would have been really cool to leave it open, but because of the fly-through that New South did, we've got these technological advances that will soon allow visitors to have a more immersive experience.
October is Archaeology Month in Virginia, and Building X made it onto the poster for this year's Archaeology Month. And so, you know, this poster is really highlighting some of the most important archaeological projects, sites, features in the state. So what makes you think that Building X rose to that level and was included on that poster?
Yeah, well, I think a couple of things. One is, as I noted at the start of the podcast, you know, this site is important to the history of archaeology in Virginia and in the U.S. It's really one of the, I think it's been overlooked by archaeologists as one of the important sites where the first use of things like, you know, stratigraphy and a grid system were used. I think it gets overlooked in that we focus on Colonial Williamsburg as a place of archaeology, but I think this was an important site here too, in that in the history of archaeology and then on its own, because I think it is important to look at where our founders came from, because by doing that, you can get a better sense of how they became the persons that they became. And you know, I can get lofty and say, you know, how did they together, how did all of them together come up with these ideals of democracy that we're still practicing over 200 years later, right? And so in order to do that as an archaeologist, I think you need to look at what's there. And I think that this is an important site. And so if you want to understand, you know, who George Washington is, you need to understand the family from which he came and the larger community and culture out of which that family came. And so that's where I think Building X is really important.
That was beautifully put.
Thanks. Thank you.
Are there any other events occurring during Virginia's Archaeology Month or any other events that you would like us to showcase to our audience?
Right. Well, there is on November 16th in at Colonial Williamsburg, there is a celebration of 50 years of Virginia archaeology. There'll be, I think, over 40 tables, different organizations across the state talking about archaeology for the public. It's going to be great for the kids. And New South will have a table there. Carrie and I will both be there, and we're going to have opportunities for people to see pictures of Building X, to learn more about it, and hopefully for kids to maybe draw what they think Building X may have looked like at the time that the Washington family was living there. That's Saturday, November 16th from 10 to 3 o'clock. So please come out.
So if you've enjoyed this podcast and listening to Maureen and Carrie talk about this site and the features of it, come on out and listen to them and talk to them in person and ask them your own questions.
Well, we want to thank both of you sincerely for joining us on this podcast and for all the work and effort you've put into helping us understand the site here.
Yep, it's been a pleasure, and we've got a lot more to do, a lot more research projects, and excited to be a part of it.
Yeah. And, you know, I just want to say for me personally, this was a real highlight of my 30 plus archaeological career. I've dug at lots of really great places. This was really amazing for me, who started as an 18-year-old with a lot of questions at Mount Vernon, and then later, you know, was able to work there. Then it felt more full circle to be like, oh, this is neat. And this really allowed me to just, you know, and I felt like it, in a sense, I was able to kind of give back to a lot of the folks that helped me get to where I am. And so I'm just really happy to, we were so thrilled. All of New South was thrilled to be on this project and to be able to do this and to contribute in the way that we did. So thanks to all of you, and thanks for having us on the podcast.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Upon This Land, History, Mystery, and Monuments. The park has some major milestones in its future, including its centennial anniversary in 2030 and the tricentennial birthday of George Washington in 2032. Will the mysteries surrounding Building X be truly unlocked by then?